This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview.
Hello and welcome to Research Talks from Stockbox with Alan Green. Morning, Alan.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you?
Yes, I'm very good, thanks. It's overcast down here in Seaford now after a great week of weather. So I think we're due for a rainy weekend. But nonetheless, it's always good to be approaching the weekend.
It is indeed. It is indeed. So you joined us, Alan, a couple of weeks ago to tell us about ECR Minerals and Eddie Stobart Logistics. And the podcast was quite well received, it seems. So hopefully we're going to be doing these research talks a few times a month, which is good.
That's good to hear. Well, I'm looking forward to bringing some more ideas to your audience and just sharing the knowledge I've acquired over the years, and hopefully your listeners will find it useful.
I'm sure we will. I'm sure everyone will. It's certainly very interesting. And today we've picked two companies that are in equally hot sectors at the moment. One is mining, specifically gold mining. And the other is pharma, and specifically COVID-19. So what's not to like, eh?
Front and centre.
Exactly. Yeah. So the companies that we're going to talk about, you're going to present, are Open Orphan and Katoro Gold. And I think we're going to start with Katoro first. Is that right?
That's right, Mark. Yes, yeah. So Katoro Gold. Now, Katoro Gold is an AIM-listed company. The epic code is KAT. Shares are traded as high as 4.5p and as low as 0.85p on the year. Currently trading at 1.9p with a market cap of just under 6 million and I think 323 billion shares in issue. I'm sorry, I'll have to revisit that point. But nonetheless, Katoro Gold have a number of projects on the go. They had a number of other projects, and during 2020, they have disposed of what was referred to as the Inwiru Gold Project. It was sold to Lake Victoria Gold for a staged payment of $1 million and also 1.5% net smelter royalty fee going forward. And that's the money from that sale will come back to Katoro either in the form of shares or cash. Added to this, the company raised just over $1 million at 1.5p in June. So that's really put a floor under the share price. Obviously, we're trading at 1.9p at the moment. Healthy institutional ownership as well. Something like 32% of the shares in Katoro are owned by institutions, with a good, healthy chunk in public hands as well. So what's it all about? The company, as the name would imply, is engaged in gold projects. And the flagship project is a 50-50 joint venture with Blyvoor Gold Operations. And the holding company for Blyvoor Gold Operations is Target Mine Consulting. And Blyvoor Gold Operations owned 6 gold tailing dams containing a JORC resource. JORC, of course, stands for the Joint Ore Reserves Committee, and it's an industry standard agreement that was set up some years ago between Australia, Canada, South Africa, USA, and the UK to agree a benchmark standard for mining resources. So the Blyvoor gold tailing dams have 1.34 million ounces of an average grade of gold of 0.3 grams per ton. So straight away there, you've got a huge asset plugged into both Blyvoor gold tailings and Katoro gold. Now Katoro have developed developed the Blyvoor project throughout 2020. Indeed, there have been a series of key announcements moving forward with this. I should also say at this point that the board of Katoro are well regarded. Louis Kurtzey is the CEO, and he's also the CEO at Kibo Energy, which I've done some work with in the past, and Great Basin Gold. And indeed, his chief ops officer, Louis Sheepers, also worked with Louis at Great Basin Gold too. So there's a long-standing team there with many years of experience. Also, mm-hmm. Miles Campion, who's well known around the city too, is on the board. So, the Blyvoor Tailings Project is targeting an initial production of 250,000 tons a month, ramping up to 500,000 tons of material from tailings in 2 years. Now, once the Blyvoor project gets up to 500 tons per month of material tailings processed, that will equate to somewhere in the region of 35,000 ounces of gold per year. Now, you and I were talking, Mark, before we started the podcast about the gold price and how it's just relentlessly progressing, and it's almost in a perfect situation at the moment for valuation going forward, because of the COVID crisis. And of course, with the COVID crisis has, as we said, wreaked havoc across global economies. It's meant that governments have had to rapidly implement monetary policy to deal with and to resolve the issues that's caused by the isolation. Of course, this involves furloughing, financial assistance for companies. All this has cost a huge amount of money, and essentially, the money has had to be printed, for a better word, to actually deal with it. Which, of course, has the net effect of devaluation. The currency devalues. Mm-hmm. And of course, when fiat currency is devaluing, investors turn to hard commodities and assets, tangible assets that they can realize value in. And gold is right at the top of that list. Having said that, of course, other commodities like platinum gold metal, the Platinum Gold Metals Group, industrial commodities like iron ore and lithium and so on are also key to this too. And I do believe, and I said this when I spoke about ECR, that the mining sector, or the junior mining sector in particular, is undergoing a sea change at the moment. It has been in the doldrums. In fact, it's undergone a massive period of depression for many, many years. And I do see now, and there's clear evidence of this, that we are seeing a recovery in the junior mining sector. And, of course, ECR Minerals in the Victoria region, we've spoken about that, but mm-hmm. This is a key gold tailings project. And as with many of these gold projects that may have lain dormant for years, once the gold price gets to a certain level, mm-hmm. the projects then become economically viable again. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is very much a top front and center of that. So, Katoro, the most recent developments at Blyvoor, there was a site visit by a team of investors at the start of this month, July, and this formed part of the DFS Defensive Feasibility Study, whereupon drilling and metallurgy work was undertaken ahead of planning out the gold processing plant. So the team are progressing rapidly. The company is well funded to do this, and it said, in fact, the company said earlier this week that it was looking to complete project financing before 30th of September, which will be sufficient to fund the beneficiation plants, which will basically be processing the ore to produce gold shortly after that. So, really, in terms of developing a mining project, this has happened at breakneck speed. It really has progressed very rapidly indeed. And of course, if you look at 35,000 ounces of gold produced per year, realistically, if the plant is built and production starts even at the end of next year, then we're 2 or 3 years away from that. Then, of course, with that sort of production, who knows where the gold price will be then? But I think we can safely say that on a market cap of 5.92 million, that seems a very conservative number when you look at what's just around the corner for the company. Mm-hmm. And it would be good if it were just the Blyvoor Tailings Project, but of course it's not. The Katoro is also involved in the Hanetti Project in Tanzania. And the Hanetti Project entails 5,000 square kilometres of prospective territory in central Tanzania, and it's centred around the town of Hanetti in that region. And the area's prospective for gold, also for nickel, lithium, and PGM, the platinum gold metals group. We were also saying beforehand, Mark, about we're discussing briefly power metal resources, POW. Mm-hmm. And of course, Power Metal Resources have entered into an agreement with Katoro Gold. They invested initially to take a 25% stake in the Hennessy project with good by buying shares in Katoro, and they have an option that they can complete by the end of August, which will increase the holding from 25% to 35%. And again, here there's a lot of interest in third parties in developing the project. The studies undertaken initially across the Hennessy region and the different territories and geological anomalies there have revealed or have indicated that that there's great potential under the ground. And soil sampling, which was undertaken last year, has also increased the potential strike area from what was initially estimated to be a project of great potential. So there are a number of reasons to look at Katoro, and I think with the market cap cited where it is at present, Blyvoor obviously is the key project, but I think Hennessy could actually become a much larger and more diverse project longer term, simply because it contains firstly, it covers a very large area, and secondly, there are all these different. It's a polymetallic project with all these different metal groups there, which also contains gold. So, it's got a very exciting future. But I think also key to this is the pace at which events have developed this year with Blyvoor, and I think we're going to see a sustained period of news flow going into quarter three and quarter four this year, and we should see. I believe a material re-rating before the end of the year.
Right, and is it Blyvoor that they have all these interested potential parties?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Blyvoor. They have they have interest from third parties at Hennessy as well. So that's and that's of course once Power Metal Resources came to the table, that it just broadened the appeal and the reach into other potential investment sources. But yes, the site visits, the investment that they've raised already, they've brought a number of investors to the Blyvoor site, and there's an awful lot of interest in funding that project and getting it up and running as quickly as possible. So yeah, Louis Kersey's done a great job this year, and considering the restrictions imposed by COVID, I think he's done a remarkable job.
And what do you make of Louis as a CEO then? I notice he does get a little bit of stick sometimes on some of the boards. What's your opinion of him?
Well, I met Louis. I've met Louis on several occasions. I mean, he's just basically. He's a very nice guy, but there's a steely resolve there. I can tell you that. And when he applies himself to something, he'll make sure that the job gets done and done to the best of his ability. And I think I think a lot of that stick has probably come from developments in Kibo. That given the nature of the Kibo business, it's a much longer term project. But with Katoro Gold, it's a very near term. There's a very near term win here, I believe, for the group with the Blyvoor tailings project, and that's really confirmed by the investor interest in the project and the fact that they've been able to bring so many people to site and get the project to the stage where they can settle project financing really by the end of next month. So we're probably sort of 6 weeks away from project financing being completed. So that's pretty exciting. That's a very near term.
And what do you make of the project financing then? So it seems to be keep getting extended. Is that right? The time when the decision is going to be taken.
Well, as with all of these processes, it's never straightforward. Mm. And I think the primary reason for the delays has been COVID, and considering how far the project has come this year, the only restrictions have been getting people to site, and of course the fact that the company raised the money, and it raised at 1.5p in June. I think that sent out a very positive signal to the investing community, but I have absolutely no doubt at all that the funding will get squared away for the project, and this will be up and running by the end of the year.
I mean, there does seem to be a fair bit of confidence, I would say, in Gotoro. As you say, they raised at 1.5, but the share price very quickly recovered back up to just below 2p. But it does seem to 2p seems to be the sort of psychological barrier at the moment, and perhaps it's just waiting for that catalyst, and particularly in this gold market that we're seeing, and other exploration companies in the area moving. It's perhaps just waiting for that sort of catalyst to kick start.
Well, I think the factors are in place, and of course, yeah, until project financing is in place and agreed, that's always going to be a factor that will hold it back. But certainly in terms of potential, if they're producing 500,000 tons of material from the tailings, or processing 500,000 tons per month, that will produce 35,000 ounces of gold per year. You can do the math on that. It's pretty simple. That's going to be a game-changing milestone for the company. And of course, once we get financing in place, it's then a question of getting it built and getting the tailings processed. The definitive feasibility studies also underway too. And of course, we already have the JORC estimate for the resource there. So given everything that's happened to date, all the boxes have been ticked, and of course the final tick in the box will come from project financing. So I believe we get to August 31st, the company delivers on the financing, the project financing is in place, they will then work as fast as they possibly can to get it built, get the tailings processed, and away we go.
What would be your fair value market cap then?
Well, I think we saw what happened to ECR. I mean, ECR, Gray Brown said that, of course, if it were listed on ASX, the company would be trading four times the value. Certainly, since we first spoke about it, the company has certainly over doubled in value. So I think with Katoro, once that financing is squared away, I think we'll easily see. It's all about, I think, once the financing is in place and they lay down clear markers to get the processing plant built and to get the mine into production, then I think we can see that then I think we'll see a rapid ramp up in valuation, probably 3 to 4 times. We could in September and October be seeing a valuation 3 to 4 times where we are now.
Okay, great. Okay, good. Well, thank you for that, Alan. So, next company we would like to talk about, moving into the pharmaceutical industry, which again is very hot. I must admit, I'm not a pharma investor myself, never have been, but you can't help but avoid pharma these last few months. It's all over Twitter, it's all the talk. So, Open Orphan, tell me about Open Orphan then.
Well, this is a company that I should say at this point I currently don't own shares in Katoro, but I'm looking I do actually have a buy order in for some shares, but I do own shares in Open Orphan, and will continue to do so. Open Orphan is a company that was set up originally to bring what is a fragmented market for orphan drugs together. And orphan drugs primarily are drugs to treat rare diseases that are expensive to develop, often require government funds to do so. And it's also a very fragmented sector. The executive chairman, Carol Friel, also is one of the industry's good guys, and I speak to Carol regularly, and he is very much the driving force behind Orphan, and he has a clear vision, and he also has a great track record of developing companies and bringing them to market. With all companies, I also look at skin in the game too, and he owns nearly 7% of the company. Invesco own nearly 8% of the company, so that should tell you an awful lot about the type of guy he is. They have a great board: Tim Sharpington, the chief ops officer; Leo Tools, CFO; Andrew Cashbold, chief scientific officer. And on the advisory board, they have Professor Brendan Barclay and Professor John Oxford. And Professor John Oxford was one of the founders of hVIVO, and I'll come on to hVIVO in a second. But he's also the go-to guy for the BBC and Sky, and he's been he's been on the BBC and Sky more or less every week, just talking about COVID, talking about virology. He's an author as well. He's published books on virology, which are very much industry bibles in that area, and. Throughout his history, he's worked on the SARS virus, he's worked on AIDS virus, he's worked on flu virus, and he just has a vast amount of experience. So the team behind Orphan are mightily impressive. The company itself, I should say at this point, the Epigenetics ORPH, market cap of 86 million, currently trading at just under 13 pence. Shares are trading as high as 16 pence and as low as 4.5 pence on the year. June last year, Open Orphan was formed through acquiring Venn Life Sciences in a reverse takeover. I'll go on to what Venn does in a minute. January this year, it completed a merger with hVIVO, and hVIVO, of course, has been a key part of developing the COVID clear test and the treatment for COVID. But also, its quarantine rooms have been featured in the press, on TV, on many occasions throughout the crisis, as the key centre for where the testing for COVID looking to establish a vaccine for COVID. It's all been taking place at the hVIVO quarantine centre at Queen Mary's Hospital in East London. So the company, Carl Friel said that Open Orphan through bringing the companies together, through the mergers, through the economies of scale, and of course, the reduction of fixed costs, the company, he says, will be profitable in this financial year, which runs through to the December. So currently, the company is hVIVO, we know, is generating about 15 million sterling per annum, and I'll basically go through now each company that's owned by Open Orphan, so we can understand the actual model. So Open Orphan Services was set up and it operates hVIVO and Venn Life Sciences. And as I said, hVIVO owns Europe's only 24-bedroom quarantine clinic, and it has 8 viral challenge study models currently underway for flu, respiratory virus, asthma, cough, COPD, and also, of course, COVID. It has worked with a company called Quotient. This is a NASDAQ listed company called with Epic Code on NASDAQ, QTRT, on a joint venture using Quotient's Mosaic system to develop the COVID clear treatment. This is currently the most accurate antibody test available for employees, and they're targeting employees so they can test their employees before they go back to work, and they can test up to 3,000 a day. So it's a very it's been developed and currently it's being used at the quarantine center.
Okay.
Also in the group are Venn Life Sciences. Venn Life Sciences is a drug development company offering CMC, chemistry, manufacturing, and controls, and provides its services to a range of companies. So larger pharmaceutical companies basically contract Open Orphan to undertake their contract research. And this is where Orphan also makes its money. Secondly, for Open Orphan, they have a virtual rep platform, and this enables pharmaceutical companies to engage key opinion leaders via a remote virtual rep platform to discuss rare diseases, orphan diseases, and garner opinion, and also come to a conclusion or agree on a particular course of treatment. It can be implemented at any stage in the life cycle of the drug prior to regulatory approval, and of course, orphan charges the companies to use this platform to access those leaders. Thirdly, Orphan has its genomic health database, and it's one of Europe's largest databases of rare disease clinical and genomic data. And indeed, we know the data is so valuable, they can charge up to £3,000 per patient. So in summary, the company earns from hVIVO cash generation of about 15 million sterling per annum. VenLife and the contract research organization services are provided to huge pharmaceutical companies like Solvay and Ipsen Pharma. And of course, clients pay to provide products via the virtual rep service to key opinion leaders, and researchers pay to access the genomic database and pay up to £3,000 per patient. We know Orphan currently trades on about 2x sales and on a PE of about 5, which is pretty modest considering. And I put this comparison together, so I think I hope listeners will be able to see the potential upside in the company. We just take Quotient, for example. Quotient, with whom Open Orphan has the joint venture to produce the COVID clear treatment, is traded on Nasdaq and it has a market cap of $665 million. Full year revenues last year were $31 million, and it's a loss-making company. Now, I've looked at a number of pharmaceutical companies trading on Nasdaq, and this is similar throughout. Now, Open Orphan is probably going to turn over in the region of 20 to 25 million sterling this year. Cal has said the company will be profitable, but yet it trades on a market cap of just $86 million in the UK. So I think there's a valuation gap there to be filled. And I think you just look at the news flow from Open Orphan throughout the year and the pace of development. I do believe that you will see Open Orphan re-rate rapidly towards the end of the year as the company continues to progress.
Okay, because I was going to ask that about the valuation and the upside. So as I understand Open Orphan, they're not developing drugs, they're not exploring, so they're not going to hit and have an explosive revaluation. Is that right? That they're development, they're helping other pharmaceutical companies actually develop and test what they think they may have discovered. Is that right?
That's exactly it, Mark. Yeah, that's it. So they have they're a contract research organization, CRO Pharmaceuticals, which is this is where and it's their aim, particularly at the rare disease market, and of course this is a fragmented marketplace. But Carl has had this vision of pulling everything together, and of course with hVIVO, probably the timing was fortuitous if it can be viewed as such given the COVID crisis. But with the profile that hVIVO got through the merger and its quarantine center achieved through the merger, of course they have been very much at the center of developing vaccines and also patient testing actually in a quarantined environment. And there are numerous press articles that can be seen. In fact, if you go to the Novus Comms website, you'll find look at the Open Orphan page, you'll find all of those press articles listed there, so you can get some idea of the profile the group has. So yeah, there will be a consequential increase in revenues for this year. And as I say, Carl Friel owns nearly 7% of the company, and he's driving this. I've never seen somebody work as hard as he does. I mean, when he's not on the road actually presenting the company, he's actually online, presenting online and talking to investors and talking to prospective new clients. So he's an absolute he's an absolute tour de force, and I think many companies I think offer a great service out there, and often it the difference just comes down to how energetic the CEO or the chairman is, and and how well regarded they are in the industry. And I think Carl Friel is a massive factor in Open Orphan being a success going forward. And
and with it being a service provider, in terms of the revenue, then you say it's going to increase this year. How what's the growth story? What's the upside? Is it going to be perhaps more organic and revenue driven rather than sort of, you know, a material re-rating?
Well, they are in the they've also undertaken a series of acquisitions too. The company has announced a couple of weeks ago it had an option to acquire a CHIM agent, and this is the CHIM agent are a designer, manufacturer, and tester of challenge agents to use in challenge studies. So challenge studies basically are in simple layman's terms, if a drug has been developed, they need to produce, they need to challenge the efficacy of that drug at various stages during its development. And the challenge agents are those testers, if you like. So this company are specialists in producing those, and the company Open Orphan now has an option to acquire. So as the company goes forward, it is highly acquisitive. It has something like 5 million cash, I think, net cash at present. So it's making acquisitions going forward using its cash war chest, and of course. If there's another company out there which Carl Friel's will bring value that's too big, they'll probably undertake another merger and progress that way. So
it seems to me that it perhaps is if someone wants to invest in pharma, it's perhaps a good entry that's definitely a lot less risky than a development or an exploratory pharma company.
Very much so. I think as with any company that's engaged in exploration of any type, and this applies to mining companies too, the spread of risk is key. So if you we spoke about Katoro Gold, and of course we had the Blyvoor tailings project and the Hanetti project, so there's a good spread of risk there. And I think this also applies to Open Orphan. They have applications and are engaged in many different fields in the pharmaceutical development. That's both developing drugs, developing vaccines, and also testing and research as well. So it's a very rounded, diverse offering, and as such, that as an investment proposition, that hugely induces or reduces the risk in the company going forward. And I think if you look at the share price performance, it's been a gradual climb and a gradual gain over the year. And I think this will continue to we'll see the share price continue to progress in the same way.
Yeah. Okay. Good. And I was doing some research. They're in quite a lot of different areas, aren't they? They're looking at in Zika vaccine and malaria vaccine. You know, these are really, you know, horrible diseases around the world that they're involved with. Hopefully, the development of a vaccination for it, and of course COVID as well, very, very much in everyone's mind right now. It's still a fear factor around it, I think, particularly when you start hearing things like a second spike or second peak on the way, perhaps. And the COVID clear test, and that's ready to go now, is it?
That's already underway. Yes, that's already up and running, tests are already being undertaken. But you're absolutely right, Mark. You mentioned the other diseases. They've also developed a universal flu vaccine too. Of course, flu is that there are so many different mutations and permutations of flu, and of course, as you'll know, if you say to your wife, "I've got flu," she'll say, "Don't be ridiculous. It's a common cold. You're still walking around." A universal flu vaccine would be really something, and they've developed this, and they're very close to this is very close to the final phase of testing. So again, it's such a broad spread of operations, a diverse spread of operations, headed up by and a brilliant mercurial chairman and CEO who's got who owns only 7% of the company. And I see, you know, I only see this going one way.
Great. And the flu thing is amazing. I was reading just this morning on the headline news that most people in England are going to be offered the flu vaccine. So 30 million people, including everyone over 50, will be able to have a free flu. I mean, yeah, significant, isn't it, that?
It is, yeah. It's huge. But I think also the ironically, one of the byproducts of the COVID crisis is that due to the hand sanitizer program, due to the social distancing, the incidence of flu have dropped dramatically. Because of course that's how it's normally transmitted. So of course that's one of the positive byproducts of the lockdown that we've had to endure during COVID. But certainly, the flu vaccine is going to be a key part of orphans development going forward.
Great. So you're bullish on Open Orphan. Got a valuation in mind?
Well, I'll go back to Quotient again. I mean, Quotient are in a similar field. Mm-hmm. On NASDAQ, they have a valuation of $665 million US. Mm-hmm. Revenues slightly ahead of Orphan, but they are loss-making. So mm-hmm. on that basis, I would say we have a valuation we've got a value, but I think this will need to be ratified once the numbers are out, and obviously once mm-hmm. Cal delivers a profitable year for the company, I think we could see the company valuation increase two or three times. So we could be looking at valuation potentially up to 45-50p by the end of the year.
Well, okay, good. Well, thank you very much, Alan, for coming on and sharing that with us today.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
Yep, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Thank you, Alan. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this Stockbox interview. For more information, interviews, and videos, visit our website at stockboxmedia.com or give us a follow on Twitter by searching at Stockbox Media.